I'm Gab, he's Jules. It is a foggy morning in West London, although the sun's trying to compete to come out.
It's cold for sure.
It is certainly nippy, but we have a full show just to warm us up. We have the Clásico, the semi-final, the Spanish Super Cup from Saudi Arabia, where it's not nippy. We've got the Italian Super Cup. We got Chelsea going to the Tottenham Stadium and winning 1-0. They're advancing to the final. So tons of stuff. We also have Cristiano Ronaldo
and
talking
transfers.
About Ralf Rangnick. Yeah, and some transfers too. So let's get right into it. Yep. But let's start with the Clásico, the Saudi Clásico, if you will. Sid, we got to see Ferran Torres, who was finally registered. That was exciting. He starts up front. Did this game come too soon for him?
Yeah, I think it did. he did a couple of things. There was a couple of times where he sort of escaped Real Madrid behind the sort of left-back stroke, left-centre-back position. Both times, one of them, he sort of scuffed a volley. The other, he tried to pull the ball back. That was about it, and they did improve at the start of the second half when he'd been taken off. But I think fundamentally, you're right. I think it was just a bit too soon.
More importantly, we got to see Pedri and Ansu Fati as well. And I know that as we talk about the game, we're going to say that Real Madrid were able to counterattack effectively and play through Barcelona's press when they pressed them and blah, 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 which is fine. But I'm also thinking, I personally like the idea that if I'm Xavi, I'm going to say, you know what? With all due respect, I got bigger fish to fry than the Spanish Super Cup.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go out there. I'm going to play my game. I'm going to use this as a confidence booster. I'm going to show my guys that you can go and you can more than hang with these people, also because I have the cavalry coming back.
Yeah,
that's not a bad plan, is it?
No, and the second half certainly proved that. Not so much the first half, despite the goal from Bad De Jong, who did nothing else.
He's not Bad De Jong.
He didn't even know about it. He knew nothing about that goal.
He was there or thereabouts.
It's a Militao mistake. But the second half was far more promising, with Pedri coming back, and we knew it. It's a very different team with Pedri in it than without. But certainly that second half, I think, is very, very interesting.
I think, sorry, before we go on and get you on the game, Sid, I need to get your verdict. You need to be the tiebreaker here, because Jules and I have had this dispute where I make the argument that Luke de Jong can actually be relatively handy either off the bench in certain situations, and that he no longer deserves to be called Bad de Jong.
He's not
especially
a good
player. Because Frankie de Jong hasn't been great, and that the de Jong gap between the two has narrowed a little bit. Whose side are you on?
I'm absolutely on Luke de Jong's side.
Which is my side.
Which is your side at the moment. But that's incidental. I'd like to make it very clear here that I'm defending Luke de Jong, not Gab Marcotti. It's a very important point.
That's very different. That's a big difference.
Yeah. Look, I'll tell you something else. And I realise this is a slight reach, but let me make this slight reach, if only to make a point. Barcelona lost control again when Luke de Jong went off. He was really important in terms of the mechanics of the team. It's true that he has limitations, but we know what those limitations are. Don't ask him to do things he can't do. And I think he as a kind of a pivot position, as someone that others could play off, I thought he was useful. He had a couple of headers, of course, before he scored the goal. It's true that the goal itself, I disagree with you, by the way. I don't think he does know nothing about it. This isn't just Militao kicking it against him. It's Militao going to cross and De Jong getting in front of it. He is trying to get to that ball. Now, I know it's still basically a fluke. I'm not going to claim otherwise. but Luke de Jong is useful. Yes, right. He is useful. He's
good.
Not. No, of course he's not. You know, we're talking about Barcelona.
Yeah, he's not a Barca player, right?
We're talking about a club that's had David Villa and Samuel Eto'o and Leo Messi and Ibrahimovic and Thierry Henry. And I don't know, tell me some other players they've had. Some really good ones. Luis Suarez. And he's not one of those. But then, to be fair, nor is Memphis Depay.
All right, steady with the Depay. We'll get to Depay later, but I think we need to watch some love with Real Madrid, because we in the media, we love to focus where the crisis is, where the story is. The reality is, this was Real Madrid's first 11 until David Alaba got hurt just before kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, Sid, they had the right game plan. I thought they could have scored more on the counter. I thought they were never phased. This is kind of what, obviously they would have rather not have gone to extra time, but I thought the game plan kind of worked out for Carletto. Or am I wrong here?
No, I think you're broadly right. I think that this is, you know, one of the nice things about Ancelotti is that he doesn't pretend. And you've had a lot of Real Madrid managers, partly, of course, because of the way that football is consumed in Spain, if you like, culturally and in the media and amongst fans. There's this almost this idea that the counter-attack is a dirty word. you know, that you're not supposed to embrace the idea of the counter, that you're supposed to want possession, you're supposed to want to keep the ball and all these things, which, by the way, Real Madrid generally can do pretty well as well. Because, of course, when you've got a midfielder that includes Toni Kroos and Luka Modric, it's not surprising that you can do that well as well. But I think Ancelotti is nice in that he stripped away some of the taboos and said, well, look, with the players that we've got, with the kind of quality we have, why wouldn't we run counter-attacks? Now, why wouldn't we invite teams to us and go and then go beyond them? I think there were different phases, though, to the game, just to slightly kind of introduce a little bit of nuance to it, which is, I thought, for the first half an hour, up until the Madrid goal and then maybe a little bit beyond it, it wasn't just a counter-attack. It was that Madrid seemed to me to be able to cut through the middle of Barcelona so easily that when they scored, they could already have scored 3 or 4 because they'd broken through lots and lots of players going up the pitch really easily. And at that point, I just thought they're just much better than Barcelona, even if Barcelona have quite a lot of the ball. Once Madrid scored and Barcelona reacted, I thought, this is okay. And then in particular, at the start of the second half for 20 minutes from Barcelona, I thought, this is actually really very good. And at that point, I thought Madrid was slightly less comfortable. It's true that they could still run the counters. It's true that Barca looked vulnerable when they did so. But I must admit, and let's go back to what I was saying a minute ago, for a midfield with Kroos and Modric in it, I think it's a little uncomfortable for Real Madrid to have allowed Barcelona or to have seen Barcelona have quite so much control. But yes, broadly speaking, you're right. This works for them. It works, and it works very well for them.
I like to chalk the Barcelona's reaction up personally to the Xavi effect and the fact that, you know, we see this when managers come in. It gives them a lift. You've got a charismatic guy, and I think this team does have a ton of personality in the younger players. Sticking with the game, Sid mentioned the counterattack there.
Yeah.
When Vinicius accelerates like that, is he really that much faster than everybody else, or are they slow? I mean,
Dani Alves was against him, so it could be.
Well, no, but he's also leaving Araujo behind too.
Well, there's that chance in the first half where Araujo, where we think actually gets injured, where we thought maybe he sort of like pulled his hamstring. He's pretty fast as well to catch him, and that forces, I think, Vinicius to take the shot a bit early. But yeah, it's incredible that partnership between Benzema and Vinicius and the way they understand each other, and especially when you think back about the Mönchengladbach tunnel incident and all of that, it's pretty remarkable. But if you play on Vinicius' strength, it's a bit like the Luke de Jong chat we had earlier. If you play on de Jong's strength, he can be good for you, very good for you. If you play on Vinny's strength, he would be amazing for you.
Right, and except the fact that Vinny, let's face it, probably a little more multidimensional than Luke
still,
de Jong.
The main strength, the way they used him yesterday, the way they used him on Wednesday night, is very one-dimensional.
I want to touch upon this, Sid, about the Jules said it there, the Vinicius-Benzema partnership. Because I can exclusively reveal to our listeners that Sid has his own podcast, which he does with a very, very handsome man named Phil Kitro Molidis.
And wait a minute. I'm the handsome one on that podcast.
I thought you meant Sid, not Phil.
Honestly, dearie me.
I don't know. If you like your man a little more hirsute, you might be more into than pasty English people. But anyway, the point was, you pointed out that this is slightly media hype machine in the sense that it's not a partnership, Benzema-Vinicius, because they play in a front three.
Yeah.
Is that just us being pedantic when we say this? Like, there's two really good players in the front three plus Asensio?
Well, it is pedantic, but it's also true in that to kind of create the idea that this is a two, it seems A, unfair on Asensio or whoever the other one is, and B, it's kind of artificially breaking up. Now, if you're playing a 4-4-2 and it is a two-man forward line, then I think it's slightly different. That said, and this is where I contradict myself very slightly, it's very much becoming a partnership. Real Madrid are a team that are very much dressing to the left now. You know, that Benzema, it's not just that Benzema is playing well and Vinicius is playing well, it's they are playing well together and they're combining well, and Benzema is drifting to Vinicius' side and they're playing off each other a lot. In a way, by the way, that Benzema doesn't do with the right-sided attacker. So there is a partnership developing there, even if it's within a three. What I think is beneficial for Asensio in all of this is precisely that point. I mean, the more you watch Madrid gravitate to the left, the more you see Asensio, usually, or Rodrigo, or whoever's playing there, bombing up the pitch on the other side, going, hey, there's no one anywhere near me.
Right.
And because genuinely, you're seeing the defence sucked in to that kind of, what would you call it, I suppose, a zone of influence, which is Benzema and Vinicius. And I think that's beneficial for someone like Asensio, who can basically sort of turn up into that empty space on the other side of the area.
I'd imagine it's also linked to the fact that Ferland Mendy is one of those left backs who is a left back rather than an attacking left back the way a lot of people are. A lot of the modern game, you've got recycled wingers at fullback, whereas that naturally means that you can send two people over to that side, know that you'll have the cover behind with Mendy, or maybe sometimes you, some ways you have to, because Mendy's not going to go and take on the opposing right back a lot of the time. All right, Sid, I'm going to ask you the existential question about Karim Benzema.
Karim the dream.
I know Jules's view on this. We have discussed it. I feel quite passionate about it. I even put it in one of my 30 wishes for 2022, which is I want somebody to explain this to me. All right, so Karim Benzema, in 2009, Karim Benzema moves to Real Madrid for 40 million euros. So young listeners today might be like, haha, what's this, 40 million euros? Nothing, it's a bargain, right? 40 million euros in 2009.
For 21-year-olds.
For a 21-year-old especially, was just stupid amounts of money. If you look
at it. Well, it was, except that Cristiano Ronaldo turned up for, what was it, 90 million at the same time.
Right.
So it was immediately dwarfed.
Yeah.
it was, yes. And Kaká arrived as well. But, you know, those are other. But the point is, it's a lot of money. So, this just blew me away that, you know, sort of 13 or 12 and a half years later, Karim Benzema is still there. He's now the fourth leading goal scorer in the history of Real Madrid. I think he's going to easily pass Di Stéfano probably before the end of the season. He may pass Raúl as well. And I actually looked at the numbers in this. In the 3.5 years since Cristiano Ronaldo left, Benzema converted 12 penalties for Real Madrid. In anybody want to hazard a guess how many penalties for Real Madrid in all competitions he had converted before that?
Two.
It's three, actually. So had he been taking penalties at the usual clip before, he probably would be in Raul territory right now. Right? Which is pretty freaking mind-blowing that this is Real Madrid, right? Now, what I want to get from you is this. For the first 4 or 5 years of his career, he was alternating with Gonzalo Higuain, right? With one guy played and the other guy played. That overlap with Mourinho. Mourinho, remember the famous line about, you know, when Higuain gets injured and he says, oh, he has to play with Benzema. He's like, oh, sometimes I want to go hunting with my dog, but there's times when you have to go hunt. You have no choice that you have to go hunting with a cat.
Yeah.
Which... I don't quite know what it meant, but yeah, it's a bit of a diss. But it's not just Mourinho. It's many other players. He was seen as just a workhorse, a guy who would set up Cristiano or Bale, you know, runs around, smart player. Oh, he's so unselfish, he works so hard. And you've had a lot of really smart top managers go through Real Madrid, from Rafa Benitez to Ancelotti the first time round, to Zidane. It feels that only by necessity... has Cristiano leaving, has he been released? And we've discovered that, hey, this guy's actually really good. So, long story is, did Benzema improve at some point in his career all of a sudden? Or did he not have the personality to impose himself? Was there no way to get a Benzema that was this productive and also have Ronaldo productive at the same time? What is the Sid Lowe theory on this?
Right.
Were people stupid? Were these managers, these directors of football, these scouts, all these people, could they not see that Benzema can play like this?
No. Look, I'll give you Benzema's answer first. Benzema's answer is that he is a clever footballer, an intelligent footballer, and a footballer who those who understand the game knew was brilliant, but too many people didn't understand the game. And it's taken too long for people to appreciate what he was doing. So he would say it's all about them and that his game, broadly speaking, hasn't changed. Now, there's an element of truth in what he's saying, but he's wrong. And he's wrong partly because of what you're saying, because there is a productivity now that wasn't there before. The numbers do speak and they do speak differently, even if, as you say, if you look at it carefully, give him the penalties, and those numbers would already look different. I also think it's true that Benzema in some things has improved. He doesn't like that argument, I don't think, but I think he has improved in some things. But to go back to the part of your question where you said, are all these people stupid? No. They won 4 Champions Leagues in 5 seasons with this. So this wasn't stupid, this was working. And Benzema himself will tell you, look, we had a guy that was scoring 60 goals a season. And he was partly scoring 60 goals a season because Benzema was facilitating that. Now, you have also, just again, to pick up on it in terms of in the terms that you use, because I think it's really an interesting way of framing it. You just said, did Benzema not have the personality to impose himself? did he not have the personality to be more central to this team? I think the argument is actually, yes, he had the personality. He had the personality and the intelligence to subsume himself because he knows this team wins more with me playing like this. He had the intelligence to say, you know what? If that guy there, Ronaldo, is going to score 60 goals a season because I can make him score 60 goals a season, and on top of that, I either get maybe 18, 19, something like that most seasons, a reasonable return, but not a goals from return, then great, because I'm a four times European champion.
Right.
So I wouldn't say it was a lack of personality. I'd say it was quite the opposite. It was an awareness. It was a personality. It was the strength of character, maybe, to say, you know what? I don't need to be the one scoring the goals. And so what happens post-Ronaldo, I think, and by the way, it's worth noting this, the first post-Ronaldo season, Benzema struggled. It didn't work to start with. I think he got 12 goals that season, something like that. And it did feel like, oh, it's not really, he's got to find his place there. But I actually think that what happened post-Ronaldo was that Benzema was loaded with responsibility. He said, okay, I'll do something else now. And I've got the technical quality, the intelligence, and now the responsibility, and yes, maybe the emotional thing of feeling important as well, feeling like you're being pushed to do that. But so in a way, the question isn't a lack of personality, but actually a surplus of personality and a personality that too many footballers don't have, which say, I know how this works best. And how this works best is everyone going on about Ronaldo because I help them go on about Ronaldo because I help him get 60 goals a season. And so I think that's the answer. And then the other part of it, as I say, is that I think he has improved some things since then, but I think it's been an awareness. And then just very briefly, your question of, were they all stupid, all these managers? No, because they all won things and they all have Benzema playing a role that worked. None of those managers, except in the first two or three years, none of those managers ever really had doubts about Benzema. Maybe about which role he plays, but they never had doubts about him. They always played him. They always liked him. Zidane absolutely loved Benzema, loved him. But it's not like he ever said, oh, maybe I should make this guy my centre forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, you love him, but it's kind of like, it's the kind of love where I love the guy who goes and paints my garage.
No, not quite. It's you love the guy who paints my garage. If the guy painting your garage, by the way, let's make it English, sorry for a minute there. The guy who paints your garage, if that guy's Michelangelo. And that's the other thing, is that you frame the idea of Benzema doing the work for us. I don't think it was just doing the work. It was Benzema doing the intelligence. It wasn't just about, here's a guy who runs around a lot. Right.
It wasn't dirty work. Him and I have spoken a lot about it. He was never jealous of Cristiano's numbers.
I'm not suggesting that.
I'm not saying that you do. But he was never envious. He always thought and believed and knew that he could also score 35, 40 goals a season in all competitions. Maybe not the Ronaldo numbers or Messi numbers.
Jules, a question for you as someone who will have watched French football. When Benzema was playing in France still, when he was at Olympique, he played more as a number nine, didn't he? So he was perhaps closer stylistically to the player he is now than the player he became with Ronaldo. Is that right?
Yeah, he started more wide when, like, Lyon had some really good strikers at the time. It was the great teams that they had. And then moved centrally. There was always a bit of a... he has to almost learn starting playing wide and get that kind of side of the game in it. And that's why I think he likes, and he usually left, that's why I think he likes drifting naturally on the left-hand side. And I think he's got a lot of bearings there. And then, but that was part of the education of making him a number nine, a very versatile one who could play almost as a 10, and then also could be a finisher. And I think then he moved to centrally. And I think when Real bought him, he was very much as a number nine and, you know, play centrally. But I think, like Sid said, I agree completely with everything. The intelligence is what makes him so special and so different. And for sure, he says, like, Cristiano scoring 60 goals, us winning everything, why would I try to change and be more selfish and try to score 5 or 10 more goals a season? There was no need.
See, by the way, just to throw something in here, a sort of a stylistic or a functional question, we are starting to see, and this links to your first question, by the way, Gab, we are starting to see the re-emergence of that other Benzema. Look at how many goals Vinicius is getting coming in from the left, using Benzema as the player that he plays off and scoring. So we're seeing Benzema now having taken the responsibility for one thing and now starting to trust the guy on his left and starting to add that other Benzema now because of what's around it. In other words, what we're talking about is a player who has a spatial awareness, a teammate awareness that makes him more than just a centre forward.
So I think he's 23 goals in 26 games in all competition this season, which is crazy. 9 assists. If you look at the goal on Wednesday night...
Schick has a better goals-to-game ratio. Just
maybe. he's the one who takes the shot that Ter Stegen saves on Benzema's goal, on his goal. And yet, I think a lot of players would have probably put their heads in their head, their heads in their hands, and going like, "Oh, well, save," and then still be around the box. But the first thing he does after Ter Stegen makes the save and the ball is still in play, he comes straight into the six-yard box. He's there around. He's moving. I just think he's an incredible, incredible player.
The reason I raised all this is that I think one of the things I've learned is that resource allocation is what makes teams great. Whatever your resources are, can you maximize them? Can you go and be smart about it? And that's one reality. And the other reality is that it's actually difficult to do. And you're going to assess talent incorrectly. You're going to overpay for some. You're going to sign bad players. You're going to make mistakes. And because it's difficult. It's easy to get a lot of things wrong. Even the best get a ton of things wrong. So, and I say this with that said, and wearing my Captain Hindsight hat, I'm just wondering if way back when they spent $100 million on Gareth Bale so that, you know, they could have another star-studded front trio, if at that point somebody had said, because that had a bunch of knock-on effects. I'm not just talking about what happened to Bale later and his enormous salary and whatever, but also the fact that Real Madrid effectively went 3 years without signing any starters, in part because of financial restrictions, right? From Toni Kroos on to... I'm just wondering if at that point, it's always hindsight, somebody said, you know what? Rather than spending $100 million on this Gareth Bale fella, who's a phenomenal footballer, we have Cristiano here. We have Benzema, who can be as good. Why don't we go and why don't we strengthen other areas of the team? And maybe if they had done that, maybe they might have won a few more league titles.
On top of the Champions League that they won with the BBC.
What is it, 2 league titles in 10 years when you're Real Madrid? It's 2 or 3, right? It's not more than that, right? I mean, that's the reality.
I know,
I guess what I'm driving at, sometimes the answer is right there under our nose. And I'm not blaming Real Madrid for it because, like I said, it's very difficult to do. And you didn't know necessarily that Gareth Bale was going to have injuries. Well, you might have seen that coming because he's had them before, but you didn't know it was going to turn out that way. But think of all the money that was devoted to Bale. And think about in those years in between, right? In the Rafa Benitez 6 months, in the one when Zidane wins a title, wins the Champions League, but they're unhappy with the way they're playing and so on. Because let's not kid ourselves. Like 2 years ago, morale was down at Real Madrid and among fans, in part because they weren't spending money. The last legit player they brought in was Kroos, and then they went for the Asensios and Dani Ceballos and whatever, which made sense at the time. Let's try to develop our own stars. But it was also because they didn't have money to splash stupid cash, right? I mean, maybe it was Pogba. Maybe it was whoever you like. Maybe they would have gotten Mbappe. Maybe we'd be an Mbappe run. Maybe they would have gotten Mbappe, Benzema. Maybe we'd be Mbappe, Benzema, and Vinicius right now.
Maybe the question here isn't should they not have signed Gareth Bale or much more pertinently, why did they sign Eden Hazard?
Yeah, that's an even better one.
That makes more sense.
That's an even better one. Well, I'm saying you could have realized Benzema back then. All right, on to Barcelona. I am still, you know, like, Laporta got killed for when he came out and he said anything is possible.
We're back.
I don't want to get too forensic into the numbers because it bores everybody, but they recorded the $481 million loss that everybody said is by far the greatest loss of any club in history. That loss is because of a whole bunch, it's partly because of COVID, partly because of a whole bunch of extraneous, hopefully one-off items. My guru, Swiss Ramble on Twitter, pointed out that if you remove those, their loss would have been $119 million, which is still really, really bad.
Yeah.
Right? Even a COVID-adjusted loss of $119 million is just really bad. However, it's not $481 million. So their salary cap should be a lot higher, or their spending limit should be a lot higher next year. They still have this enormous debt, but they got that big loan from Goldman Sachs at an interest rate which is very, very low.
Yeah.
I mean, Sid, you've got a strong background and spent most of your life as a financial journalist, really delving deep into the accounts. Yeah. You're a qualified accountant as well. All right, who do we believe here? Like, these are all the positives going forward. And I'm not talking about now in January, but next year they will have a new spending cap. And yes. My question is, will they be over it? Do we know?
We don't know that. You're right that this is a very specific and very, very concrete moment in which their salary cap is 97.9 million euros. That won't happen again. It will be higher next year. Their ability, the actual amount of money they have will be higher, but also the limit that they're allowed will be higher, which is one of the reasons, of course, why you've got two things going in parallel. One is a kind of a broader financial question. What state are we in? And the other is the immediate thing of, can we get players through the financial fair play rules, the salary cap rules? And that is why, for example, you see this scenario in which they bring in Ferran Torres, but they can't register him until Coutinho goes and until Umtiti right. goes. And with Umtiti, you have this bizarre situation in a player that they're desperate to get rid of. They spread his salary over a four-year deal and renew him. Now, obviously, there's lots of reasons for that. One is, fundamentally, you are not paying him right now. You're pushing that money off. You're pushing a debt back, which, of course, very basic financial good sense makes you think, oof, is that a good idea, pushing it back? But right now, they needed that liquidity, or not so much liquidity, as kind of mechanical liquidity in terms of the rules. And also, of course, it means that he's, in theory at least, a more attractive purchase for other clubs, because they look at his salary now, which is reduced because it's spread over 4 years. But of course, there's absolutely no doubt that behind the scenes an agreement has been done about how Barcelona pay him off when he leaves, if he leaves. You know, this ultimately will cost Barcelona as much money, possibly even more, because otherwise there's no sense in Umtiti accepting it. So what's the answer? The answer is they are finding in imaginative ways to get through this because they're faced by a reality. And they look at Ferran Torres and they think, this is a strategic signing we have to make. And there's also another thing here, which, of course, we've seen with Gareth Bale as well at Real Madrid, and we've certainly seen it with Messi, is that players who are very, very, very expensive are sometimes very hard to move on. So Coutinho went to Aston Villa, but Aston Villa paid 65% of his salary, and he's gone on loan again. They haven't been able to sell him. Now, Luis Suarez went to Atletico Madrid for nothing and won them the league. Ivan Rakitic cost 1.5 million euros for Sevilla and is in a team that might win the league this year. So you're faced by a reality. So if you are going to have any margin to move in any way or construct in any way, then you have to do these things.
All right. Well, let me be very simple. I mean, this is something obviously Jules and I've been through this a lot. But next season, things should be, in terms of spending limits, they may still have spending limits, but they should be a lot rosier next season.
That's why they're hoping
they're gonna take
sign
a hit.
Haaland, for example.
I'm sorry.
That's why they're hoping or the dream of signing Haaland is because they believe that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's
the shortfall is still very big. So this year's salary limit is 97.9. The actual amount going on salaries is over 400 million. So even if that recovers and it gives you a bit of margin, it probably won't get you to the point of how much you are currently spending. Which is why in the summer, big wage earners will still need to go.
And they're also going to take a hit on, obviously, the Champions League having missed out on that.
Yeah, especially for quarterfinals.
But I want to put this very simply. Right now, right, with the addition of Ferran Torres, and obviously transfer window still open this January, now that they've registered him, I look at this and I say, you know what? I don't think they need to sign other players to finish top four.
Like, no, I agree with you.
Obviously, it can't hurt.
Yeah,
but
yeah, of course.
If I were Xavi's boss, I would say, you know what? You got this. I know, like, all of a sudden, nobody seems to like Depay anymore. He gets injured and it's not a big deal and he comes back. I mean, I'm sure he'll play, but, like, you've got enough to finish top four because maybe Real Madrid and Sevilla are dead certs, but you expect Rayo's already falling off.
Yeah, Betis.
Real Sociedad has fallen off. Betis, I don't know. You're not that far away, right?
No. No, look, you're not far away at all. In fact, I would go so far as to say that statement isn't even dependent on the arrival of Ferran Torres. If you have everybody fit, even without Ferran Torres,
exactly.
The 11 is really not bad. Now, there's a lack of strength in depth and there are flaws to the squad and all of those things are true. But for example, let's ignore Ferran Torres and say everybody's fit. Well, a forward line of Dembélé, Ansu Fati and Depay, for example, right? I don't think there's a forward line in Spain better than that, apart from Real Madrid's. In terms of look at the names, look at how good these players should be. You've got a midfield that's, let's say for argument's sake, Busquets, Gavi, and Pedri. and maybe Nico and Frenkie de Jong. Well, there isn't a midfield in Spain better than that, or a collection of midfielders in Spain
other than Real Madrid.
Other than Real Madrid, and in Real Madrid's case, you'd say there's three of them, maybe four, if you include Camavinga. At Barca, I've just named six, I think. Yeah, absolutely, you should be getting in the top four anyway.
Okay. So that we've given Barcelona fans of some hope.
And we've seen an improvement with Xavi as well. Like we said, in the second half, in the game on Wednesday night, there's something, clearly he's building something.
I think he kind of had that from day one.
There's an idea. With Xavi, there's an idea. I must admit, I think the improvement has been erratic. I don't think it's been continuous. I think there have been big flaws, and there have been moments even when you could say, I'm not sure that Xavi did the right thing. But the really important thing, I think, is there's an idea and there is something to follow and the authority to see it through.
All right. One more quick question on Barcelona, just because I'm curious about this. So they made a big deal about their savings on Yusuf Demir, and obviously they're not really savings because he was on loan. But basically, if he reached a certain number of appearances, that would trigger, they would be forced to buy him from Rapid Vienna. It's 10 million. Now, obviously, they're not going to trigger that, so they don't have to buy him. So presumably he's going to go back to Rapid Vienna. From what you've seen, what people have said, right, he's very young. 10 million pounds or 10 million euros for an 18-year-old is a ton of money. Is this something Barcelona are going to regret? I appreciate you've probably only seen a little bit of Yusuf Demir, but you're there, you're around,
you've got
Abde,
oh, you've got already white players from
fine.
Your own academy.
Hey, that's fine. But if Demir turns into the next Mbappe, but what I'm saying is from what you're there, you're around all those nerds who watch Barcelona B and like who knew like Ricky Puig's like underwear size when he was 12 years old. All those people, right? They must have an opinion on Yusuf Demir.
Yeah, I'm reluctant to rely on their opinion, and also equally reluctant, as you rightly say, to offer my own because I've not seen a huge amount of him. I suppose in a way, and forgive me for being sort of flippant about this, there's a simple answer to your question. Will they regret it? Tough luck, because they're in a position where they have to do this. And financially, they're not in a position to do anything else. They don't have that 10 million. So you say, will they regret it? Well, will I regret not buying that Ferrari? Well,
no.
Yeah, maybe, but I can't afford it.
I would assume that.
And I've got a Skoda. What do I need a Ferrari for?
Exactly.
I would assume if they really wanted him, they could probably go and renegotiate somehow with Rapid Vienna, right? Because it's an agreement where you have to buy him at 10 million, make a certain number of appearances. You say, hey, Rapid, let's make a new deal where we'll give you 15 million in a year from now if he makes public. You know, like there are things you could, and if the player wants to stay and whatever.
But he's not the priority anyway.
No, clearly not.
No, he's not.
I was just curious about him because obviously there was so much hype. I was struck by something, by a tweet from a colleague of yours, Santi Jimenez, who is a Barcelona-based reporter for Marca, I think. I don't know. He's a dude with red hair and the glasses.
He's at Diario As, yeah.
And he pointed out that the last time Dani Alves played in a Clásico, there were six Real Madrid players who are still there. But in the meantime, like, half this Barcelona squad, you know, Depay hadn't even gone to Manchester United yet. Yeah. Half this Barcelona squad, like, you know, were...
Someone
even seemed to be kids and so on. Oh. And when he put it like that, it seemed pretty striking. It seems to me like Real Madrid if these teams were fruit, Barcelona would still be one of those sort of disgusting, hard, green bananas that you know could be good one day, but for now. Whereas Real Madrid are ripe and in full maturity as a team. That's kind of the analogy he made.
Let's use the banana analogy. Does that mean that tomorrow that banana's starting to go a bit squishy and a bit black and it's not so good anymore?
Or black, you know, like
how close are Madrid to be? Because Madrid know this, by the way. You know, there's a reason they signed Camavinga. There's a reason they have Fede Valverde. They're aware that at some point that transition has to happen. But of course, Luka Modric keeps on putting it off by being brilliant.
Yeah. So there you go. So they haven't. The banana hasn't turned all black.
Dani Alves' first goal for Sevilla was against Real Madrid back in 2003. I mean, I can't even...
I believe...
My brain can't even process these stats.
I believe, to score that goal, that was a famous goal where he dribbled past Hugo Sanchez, Rafael Martin Vázquez, Nietzsche, and then Sanchis, Chendo, and Gordillo, all in one run. That's how long ago it was. Yeah. I finally said, this game's been played in Saudi. It's not unusual for Super Cups. They've been played abroad, and Serie A has done it. Is Ligue 1?
Yeah, Ligue 1, plenty of times.
Where'd you go?
Yeah, Morocco, Israel, China, Canada.
Oh, there you go, all over the world. Canada, but the French-speaking part, I assume, yeah?
Yeah, it was okay. Montreal.
But obviously with Saudi, it is more of a loaded issue as well, given the human rights record. Were you surprised at what Raul Garcia, the Athletic Bilbao guy, said before? But before this game, about why are we doing this? Why are we going here?
I was surprised because I was surprised that a player was prepared to say it. I think I should probably caveat this in terms of Raul Garcia, because Raul Garcia, the way he expressed this, was actually not about the politics. He didn't talk about the Saudi regime. He didn't talk about Saudi society. He didn't talk about LGBT rights or women's rights. He didn't focus it on that at all. He focused it on a very, very much more simple thing, which takes it away from Saudi Arabia and goes back to all those examples you were just reading out. But on a very simple thing of, this is the Spanish Super Cup, why are we going abroad? Not necessarily why are we going to Saudi Arabia. And in Raul Garcia's defense, because, well, I don't know if this counts as defense, but I think so, he talked about it as a part of a broader thing of not really caring about the fans. And here, by the way, of course, we have to recognize this. It's a narrow view of what fans are. You know, he's talking about the fans that go to your games every week, the fans that are in your kind of local community, which, of course, if you play for Athletic Club, is an even more sort of powerful statement in a way, because you're talking about a club that's very much of its community. And he said, we don't do things thinking about fans. So, for example, he even picked up on or mentioned, you know, the games we play in Spain are at bad kickoff times. We're doing things for markets and for sponsors, not for fans. And in that sense, of course, as I say, it's not about the political element of going to Saudi Arabia. It's about the fact that you're taking it somewhere else. And I want to slightly defend Raul Garcia as well from the accusation that inevitably has come from this, which is, well, you make a load of money because of all this. Well, he doesn't actually make a load of money because of all this, because this is the first time Athletic Club have been forced to go abroad. You know, he signed a contract 4 years ago before any of this happened. You know, this isn't, so he's not saying, let's not have money, let's not have commercial viability, let's not chase investment, let's not chase sponsorship. He's saying, let's not lose sight of those theoretically simple elements. And he also caveated this or prefaced it by saying, look, yeah, I'm quite old fashioned. I see the football in slightly different terms. So I don't see the hypocrisy that he's accused of, because of the simple fact that he is paid to play football. That doesn't make him a hypocrite. What? Because he's paid money, he's not allowed to have an opinion. He's not allowed to say, hang on, should we stop this? I just think that's it's a nonsense argument. It just doesn't stand up, in my opinion.
Well, if anything, you could argue he's entitled to more of an opinion because he benefits from it. You see what I'm saying? He's not
yes,
somebody who's...
Yes, because he's actually advocating something that could be detrimental to him. Yeah. He's advocating not going there and not having that money. And you know what? If that means we have less and I have less, I still think it's the right thing to do. And as I say, though, it wasn't focused on the political side of it, which has been talked about a bit, but less so now because it's the second time they've gone. The first time they went, the president of the Spanish Federation, Rubiales, I tried to suggest that this was a moment of perestroika. You know, this was opening things up. We will go there and this will help women's rights. This will help open up Saudi society. He even tried to call it the Super Cup of Equality. But, you know, by us going there, this will change things. And I think this time he's realized that actually probably backfired on him. And so now he's just kept out of it.
Joe, I mean, as I see it, there are, you know, Athletic Bilbao, as Sid says, the club is very rooted in its in the community and in the Basque country and so on. Real Madrid, I think, can just as legitimately say, well, that's not us. We're a global brand. We have fans from all over Spain. We have fans all over the world. Why shouldn't we go, right? Yeah. And it is, and look, this is obviously about money. The kickoff times are about money. I don't have a problem with it being about money, but I want people to be straight about it. Because if you were to simply go, oh, let's go where there are the most Liga fans in the world, maybe you wouldn't be going to Saudi. You're going to Saudi because they're paying you a lot of money. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like Manchester United, you know, when they go, right? If they went to Nigeria, there's probably more United fans per head in Nigeria than there are in Saudi or Emirates or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
But, you know, it's as simple as that. So if it was about, oh, let's bring it to our fans. No, let's bring it to where we can monetize around the world.
It's a 10-year deal.
And that's fine. It's a business.
It's a 10-year deal worth €300 million exactly. or something like that. It's what Eric Cantona said about the Qatar World Cup. He said, I'm all for bringing football to places where you can develop it, and but he doesn't think that Qatar is one, and you could say the same about Saudi Arabia and Spanish football.
Sid, we need to leave it there. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Classico. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Chelsea beat the mighty Spurs 1-0 to advance to the League Cup final with a 3-0 aggregate score. Jules, this felt a little too easy over the two legs and kind of weird with all the deflected goals.
Yeah, the goals, the VAR.
Like two of the three goals.
Yeah, the penalty that was struck off as well, rightly. So, I mean, the three big calls were the right calls made. I mean, I don't know how they gave the penalty in the first place. The Kepa out on Lucas Moura. I was like, wow, okay.
Well, even the other penalty, I mean, you expect a professional referee. Completely. I mean, look, this is what VAR is there for. Mariner, a few years ago, he was more highly rated than he is now, and I think he's kind of like on
what
the way
happened?
Out.
Like he's
But this was a terrible day at the office for him.
Oh, my God. Horrible. And I think, again, we go back to what we said after the first leg. This is the gap between Chelsea and Spurs right now. Spurs don't have enough good players to be able, I think, to compete, especially over two games with Chelsea. This is...
What did you think of Tuchel's formation?
Yeah, I mean,
figure out what it was?
But you just go and I guess this is a good game to experiment. I think he knew they were never going to get knocked out and losing 3-0 over there. And then the fact that you score... Early-ish, puts you in such a comfortable position.
You only need to lose 2-0, remember?
Yeah, 2-0.
Because there's no away goals.
But third final since he arrived a year ago. Obviously, FA Cup that he lost, Champions League that he won, and then this one. He's never lost a semi-final before. It doesn't mean that he's won all the finals then that he went on to play, but never ever lost a semi-final, which is a pretty good record, to be fair.
I think Jose Mourinho hadn't lost a semi-final for like the first 10 years of his career.
Yeah, and look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Has only won one of all the semi-finals. Yeah.
Steven Gerrard's never lost a semi-final. Actually, maybe he has in Scotland. Never mind.
Okay, yeah, it's good. Antonio Conte keeps saying he's respectful to sticking with Spurs, respectful of the club when it comes to transfers. Gab, what does that mean?
I think he's biting his tongue. Yeah. But he's like,
what? This is the 13th. No one has arrived yet.
So look, my understanding is that obviously, you know, we've had this in the past where with Conte demanding transfers, we know the story. But Conte's not an idiot. Conte knew what Tottenham's situation was going in. He knew who Daniel Levy was. He had Fabio Paratici at the club who could tell him the situation. I think, obviously, he wants to bring in players. I think people made a big deal about the wing-backs. I think he's thinking more a centre-back and a central midfielder and a reserve striker. I think that would be his wish list. But above all, what he wants most of all, and I think should be the priority, although I'm not sure he can get an answer, is what does Harry Kane want to do? Is Harry Kane going to leave? Is he going to leave in January? Is he going to leave in the summer? Is he recommitted? I think it's very difficult for Spurs to plan anything until they know what happens there. And so I have a bit of sympathy for Daniel Levy here. Kelechi Iheanacho gives Nigeria a win over Mo Salah's Egypt in the Africa Cup of Nations. Jules, were you expecting a bit more from Egypt? And did we underrate the Super Eagles a bit given the absence of Victor Osimhen?
I think we did. They're the best team that we've seen so far in the tournament, Nigeria. They were fantastic. I thought the way they pressed, they looked so sharp. By far the sharpest of all the teams in terms of fitness, match fitness.
You're on Team Gernot, aren't you?
Gernot has been sacked, bless him, which is not ideal either. And no Osimhen, and no Emmanuel Dennis, and there's a few more missing. But I thought they were fantastic. And Egypt, this is what I expected from them. I think they're a solid, really disciplined and well-structured team. But apart from Salah, I think he lacks a lot of
Just talent. Wait for the moment of magic.
But only for him, there's not much. He can't be at the start and at the end of everything. So I think to go all the way, I think they will have to improve massively. Ibrahima Kone's penalty gave Mali a win over Tunisia on Wednesday. But Gab, the story is referee Janis Sikasve, who blew for the final whistle when there were still 5 minutes left to go. And he, by the way, had a bit of previous as well.
Yeah, so this is weird. I've never seen this
Incredible.
Before. It's like he lost track of time. He blows for the final with 5 minutes to go, which is weird because they just had a drink. You know, the drinks breaks come at a certain time. So
it was really hot and he looked a bit dizzy at times, I thought.
And then it looked like he just wanted to get out of there because then they come back and there's, you know, and then he blows 20 minutes early as well before the 90th minute. 20 seconds early.
Yeah.
And no time added on despite the fact that they had VAR, they had all sorts of stuff in this game. When you say previous, you're referring to the fact that I think in 2018 is a very controversial African Champions League involving Esperance, I think, against, was it an Angolan team, Primeiro de Agosto?
I think it was.
Check it out. Correct me if I'm wrong, Twitter.
He was cleared, by the way.
He was cleared of that.
Still, it was a bit.
I don't know if the heat got to him, but there should be somebody in his ear saying, like, Johnny, what are you doing? We've got time to go. You know, there are people in his ear. Hopefully they investigate this and
then Tunisia didn't want to come back and play. 20 minutes after, the players went back to the dressing room. Caf said, let's play again. Let's play the remaining, 8 or 9 minutes. Yeah. And the Tunisian players are like, well, we just had ice bath. We're not going to go out in that heat and humidity out. It's crazy.
Nabil Fekir has signed a deal through 2026 with Betis. Jules, his contract was up in 2023. This is pretty huge.
It is huge, and he's been fantastic for them this season, wearing the armband as well. At times, really back to his best. Maybe the best level he's ever had, even when he was really good with Lyon and France. The Dusan Vlahovic saga rumbles on, Gab. Reports suggest that Arsenal could meet the asking price, but his agents are the big turnoff here.
They are. Now, my understanding is that, you know, with Lacazette and Eddie Nketiah leaving, obviously Alba, even if Alba stays and they have to keep paying him, you know, they could meet his demands, his wage demands. And obviously the fee is going to be big. There's talk of 70 million euros, could be a little bit less, bonuses, whatever. But the issue is the agents. And we've talked about this before, but the numbers that are out there are something like 15 to 20 million euros in commission now to make this deal happen. Plus, they want 10% on a future sale.
Which is really unusual for
Which is extremely unusual.
The commission, you can, okay.
And it creates a pretty dangerous precedent as well. And this is what's turned off a lot of clubs. My understanding is that a lot of clubs have inquired about Vlahovic, from Bayern to Spurs. Obviously, that would be a Harry Kane situation, to Manchester United, to Real Madrid. You know, not that they say we want to buy him.
What's the deal here? Yeah.
Even your boys, even Nasser,
course,
has been in touch.
Of course, yeah.
And then when they hear from these agents, they're like, well, we're not going to do that. And somebody put this to me very, very well. Because his agents say, well, we're charging market rates. They're in line with market rates, right? They're in line with market rates if your name, if your first name is Mino and your last name is Raiola and you're moving Erling Haaland. Yeah. Vlahovic is great, but he's not Erling Haaland, not yet.
No.
Secondly, when Erling Haaland moved, there was he had a release clause. So from Leipzig, they were only going to get, sorry, not from Leipzig, sorry, from Salzburg, it was only 20 million.
Yeah.
So obviously then there's more money that goes to the agent. And on top of that, Mino Raiola has got a ton of pull because he's got players all over because he helps move players and whatever. These guys who look after Vlahovic do not. That's why they can't charge that kind of money. And it's tough on the player. I hope it doesn't end. He's got 18 months to go.
They will see sense, surely.
I hope it doesn't end up with him just sitting on the bench or getting injured or whatever else, because he either needs to commit to Fiorentina or he needs to come up and say, I want to go now, and say it clearly. But he's having the best season of his career.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. I got the itch for some more quick hits.
Yes.
See what I did there? Yeah. Alexis Sanchez gets the last-ditch winner in the Italian Super Cup in the 121st minute. Jules, and since you like your substitutions, it was Darmian, Correa, Di Marco, and of course, Alexis involved. Everything going right for Simone Inzaghi.
Everything. And to be fair, they deserved to win that final, that Super Cup final, without a doubt. They were the better team overall, even if Juve scored the opening goal and Weston McKennie. But I thought
They created more chances, especially in the second half. And the substitution worked. You're right. It's a DiMarco cross. Damian is a bit more aware in the box, certainly with Alexandro. And then it's a great finish by Alexis, who doesn't score many this season. I think that's the fourth one, but important ones. And
it's a big word to say
and
afterwards.
Celebration as well and all of that.
He said, I'm like a lion in a cage when they release me onto the pitch. Love that.
Love that. There was a pretty nasty banner as well, Gab, in the game against President Andrea Agnelli, displayed at San Siro. Some Juve fans turning on him, not happy.
I mean, yeah, so the banner, the banner was displayed before the game, and then but you couldn't wasn't fully displayed. The pictures I saw, like there was one letter which wasn't clear, it was either Agnelli fuori, which means Agnelli out, or worse, Agnelli muori, which means Agnelli die. So, not good. I think there are fans who are against him. I think part of the ownership are now questioning this. I don't think it's necessarily because the team's not doing badly or illegally coming back or whatever. I think it's more the way this team's been run the last couple of years, and specifically putting all your eggs in the Cristiano basket, and along with a bunch of veteran, highly paid free agents who now you can't get rid of, like Aaron Ramsey and so on. Also the fact that he hasn't spoken out much in public, the Super League debacle, the accountancy stuff. It's just not a good time for him.
No.
We won't see Paul Pogba for a few weeks, and I think we're in agreement that he's in no rush to make up his mind. But, Jules, I was intrigued by this.
Yeah?
L'Equipe says he's most likely to return to Paris Saint-Germain.
That's not really what they say. And it's not a return either. Although you mean a return to Paris, where he was born. Is that what you mean?
Well, what, was he going to go play for Red Star Paris?
Well, no, but he can't return to PSG when he never played for them.
Return to Paris.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So return to Paris.
He's Paris born and bred.
So basically, this is
with a bit of Le Havre thrown in, if I'm not mistaken.
Juventus, Real Madrid and PSG are the three clubs really who are the most interested in him now, with United, of course, still being a possibility that he stays. There's a contract on the table. He will make his mind up, as we say, in the summer. But I think he would like the idea of going back to Paris and play for PSG. And I think PSG, in that sort of reshuffle in midfield, I think, again, as a free agent, could be interesting for them. So we'll have to see. I would love it. Paul, come back home, brother.
I thought you were containing yourself but yes.
Cristiano Ronaldo shared his thoughts on Ralf Rangnick and United's season. Gabby gave an interview and he said he won't accept anything below third place. He's not there for sixth or seventh or eighth place, he said. And that Ralf needs time. That makes sense to you, right?
Okay, so there's two things I think are indicative here, right? Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't speak very often. And obviously, there were all those stories that appeared, funny enough, all at the same time about discontent, the players Googling Ralf Rangnick because they don't know who he is. I hope it was only one or two of the dumber players who never heard of him. So the natural thing for the club is, let's wheel out Cristiano and ask him to speak now. And obviously, Cristiano, I don't think, would have done this. He's not a rent-a-quote at this stage of his career. He wouldn't have come out. I mean, it was the club's choice to wheel him out now, but it was his choice to say what he said.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think he said the right things.
Yeah.
He does need more time. But I think it is indicative that there are deeper things going on.
Yeah,
and you know the stuff within the squad isn't not all as well.
In the dressing room. And he said, we have to change our minds, which I think shows that he means the attitude is not right.
Meanwhile, Arsenal are heavily linked with Juve's Arthur in midfield, at least in terms of reports.
Yeah.
But Manu Petit said they should go for Gini Wijnaldum.
Manu
Petit, not just very handsome, a man after my own heart, which of course, though that can't happen, because I've already decided he's going back to Anfield on loan. Any of this makes sense? Any of this happening? Because to me, none of this makes sense.
No, but they need a player like Arthur. They need a Jorginho or Douglas Luiz, someone who is...
You know, that's not Arthur.
But someone who...
Arthur's the little cartoon character with the glasses.
Yeah, I know, but you play a holding midfielder and you just pass the ball and you dictate the play. This is not Gini's game. That's not what they do. They can't play in front of the back four. And that's not the profile.
Lokonga, Elneny.
But that's not the profile. The profile... One of them is not the profile that Arteta is looking for right now. The profile is a Jorginho type of player.
Okay, not Arthur.
Not as good. He's not as good, but you get the idea. I don't know if Arthur will happen. I don't know who will happen. They want someone on loan because then Partey and then they're going to come back. So there's no point spending 30 or 40 million on midfielder.
But that frees Wijnaldum up to go to Liverpool.
I've been advocating. Would love that, of course. You've got two more weeks and then he's yours. Roma have announced the arrival of Sergio Oliveira from Porto. Gab, it's a loan deal with an option to buy at 17 million euros. I think we mentioned it on the show on Monday. He obviously helped knock out Juventus in the Champions League last season. So the fans probably love him already. but he's not really the physical midfielder that Mourinho was thinking about, or is he?
Well, it's tough. I mean, first of all, Sergio Oliveira, like, maybe he's a late bloomer, right? We saw that with Bruno Fernandes, where nobody realized, oh, who is this guy, right? And then he bounces around, goes abroad, which is what happened with Sergio Oliveira. He was at PAOK,
he was at
Mechelen, he was at Nantes.
Yeah.
And then people turn out that he's a really, really good player. I was curious, Mourinho said, we need a more physical midfielder. I don't know that it's this dude, because, hey, he's tall, he's got the ponytail, he's got the look and
stuff.
He's
got energy, but he's not physical.
He's also really thin, too.
He's not physical.
He's not that kind of player. Look, if it's a loan deal, fine. He adds some quality into the mix. He can help. Obviously, it's not lost on anybody. You know, the trend is who this guy's agent is, and it's not lost on anybody that he was offered to Fiorentina over the summer wanting stupid money. 17 million, he's 29 years old. If that's what's going to cost you, maybe you can negotiate it down if he does well.
That's okay. I don't have an issue with this,
but he's not the physical midfielder.
No.
Kingsley Coman has re-upped on his deal with Bayern.
Yes.
Jules, they're set out wide for years to come now.
Completely. You're right. And Musiala, Sané.
Musiala can become Müller.
Exactly. Anything you want. Coman was the big one. Third highest earner now. So all that negotiation, you know, wanting a lot of money first. I think he wanted 20. They settled for 17 a year, which is gross, of course, but still. It's a lot of money.
That is a ton of money. So who makes more? Leva and Neuer?
Neuer, I would think so, yeah. He's definitely the third highest now. Listen, I think he's played fantastic this season. The little injuries are still a bit of a problem. He needs to sort that out. But I think they wanted to keep him. He wanted to stay. They had to keep him. Everybody's happy. 2020-2021 was a tough pandemic year for most clubs, Gab, as we know. But Manchester City made a profit of £2.4 million while recording record revenues of nearly £570 million. For the first time ever, Gab, they earned more money than Manchester United.
Yeah. Obviously, it was a COVID year, so United make a ton of money from Old Trafford, from match day receipts, and obviously there are no match day receipts. Obviously, there are none for City either, but obviously City make a lot less money because their ticket prices are cheaper, because their stadium's smaller, and so on. And I think, so they're less affected by it. And the other thing is they have some really big sponsorship deals with related parties. I don't think I'm letting into a series, in a secret. It's not illegal. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, but that's what they do.
You know, it's that's how it rolls.
Yeah.
They made a big loss the previous year, and like in the end, people will complain about City. Oh, they're putting in money. It's owned by the state. Did they get audited? There are companies that decide, okay, this is the fair market value for this transaction. As long as that part is working properly, I wish there was more transparency, frankly, because I don't like the idea that three nerds with glasses who pretend they're accountants or marketing people say, yeah, this should be worth $8 million, but let's not tell anybody. Let's just approve these accounts. You know, I don't. I'd like more transparency there, but, you know, there's no question. This is a very, very well-run club.
It is.
You can't stop Jared Bowen. You can only hope to contain him. He scored twice as West Ham defeated Norwich to go back into fourth place. Jules, they can do this, can they?
Yeah, of course they can, Gab, especially if they learn from last season where they missed out just narrowly on the top four, but they were very good all season. They went through a bad patch of result, but they beat Chelsea, they beat Liverpool in the league, they beat City in the League Cup as well. They've got Kurt Zouma coming back. Remember, by the way, his middle name?
His first name, I think, is something to do with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
That's right.
Middle name, Happy.
Happy
Kurt Happy Zouma. Why wouldn't you be happy if you're Kurt Zouma?
Exactly. And he's back. And I think they also probably would try to get another defender in.
Well, because Avenging Angelo Ogbonna is still out.
But we're thinking of him.
We certainly are. But, hey, at the risk of embarrassing ourselves, just being clipped and they go, don't we look stupid? Should we do some percentages of who we think will finish in fourth? We're going to update these throughout the season because it does look like a legit race.
Yeah.
I'll go first. I'm going to say 1% the field, because it's football. Crazy things happen. Maybe Wolves get in there. Who knows? 14%, I'm going to say West Ham, much as we all love David Moyes, or certainly I love David Moyes.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 35% Manchester United, because Cristiano Ronaldo said he won't accept a fifth or sixth place finish. I'm going to say 30%. Now I'm going to say 25% Arsenal and 25% Spurs, because they got all those games in hand.
Oh, yeah, nice. I think Arsenal will finish fourth, so I give them 35% chances. I think United will be the closest behind, 30%. Then I've got Spurs on 20, because I still think they're short of players and of talent, despite having maybe the best manager of all of them. And then that gives me 15% for West Ham, which I think is fair, because there's the Europa League, it's still a small squad. Yeah, so...
No chance for the field. Interesting.
No way. Jesus Corona, a.k.a. Tecatito, is close to joining Sevilla, Gab. Is this enough of a boost for them to keep challenging Real Madrid?
Well, he's hardly played for Porto this season, but he's a guy that Lopetegui, obviously he's gotten a pass at Porto, apparently really wants. He gives you an alternative out wide. I think his contract was expiring as well
in June.
So... it's another body. I think Sevilla need bodies because they're on multiple fronts. They look tired at the end and they need depth.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just Philippe Coutinho, but Luca Dean too.
Yes.
Aston Villa are serious jewels.
They are. 25 million on my friend Luca, which I think is a fair price for someone like him. Yeah, I know. I think 25 million for a really talented French international left back.
But don't they already have a very good left back?
But clearly, they think this one is better than Matt Target.
Do you think he's better?
I think he's a bit harsh on Target, I have to be honest.
Okay, thank you.
I really do. But if you really want an upgrade, I think Ding is an upgrade on Target, then yeah, that would cost you 25 million. So maybe you could have spent that money somewhere else. Maybe they still have more money to spend somewhere else. But I think Coutinho and Ding, I mean, Ding for sure. Coutinho, I'm still waiting to see what kind of form he is, shape, match fitness, all of that, but potentially it's very good, yeah. Newcastle, meanwhile, Gab, have signed Chris Wood from Burnley for £25 million. Yeah, that's £25 million. He's 30 years old, scored 3 goals this season. Yes, that's 3 goals this season. That feels a lot of money, right?
I mean, he was in double figures last year and scored a bunch of goals the year before. But that was within a certain system and a certain style of play at Burnley. Which might not suit here. I don't want to be mean to Chris Wood, but he does strike you as the kind of striker that works when you play a certain way. Now, if they're thinking of him as a replacement for Callum Wilson, I don't know. There is the big benefit to the team, though, that you're signing Chris Wood and you're really weakening Burnley. Because Barnes has been in and out. I know they have
Rodriguez and Vidra,
and they have the guy who's been scoring all the goal, but help me out. I'm blanking on his name.
Cornet.
Maxwell Cornet. AFCON. It's not like they go to Africa. They never come back.
No. They will come back, but not there now. No Cornet, no Wood, no Barnes.
I think the idea is weaken Burnley so that we can stay up, and that they're taking a longer view.
Yeah.
I hope that's the idea. Many had Algeria as AFCON favorites, but they were held by Sierra Leone in their opener 0-0. Jules, should Jamal Belmadi be worried? We all love him, right?
Yeah. I don't think so.
Unbeaten streak alive.
Loads of chances. Mohamed Kamara in goal, the Sierra Leone goalkeeper, was man of the match. The young goalkeeper was amazing, really. I think he made 7 or 8 saves. I was a bit disappointed by some of the tactics and the fact that the Algerian fullbacks didn't push too much apart from the end when they actually created the 2 biggest chances that the team had. The lack of intensity and press, but it was again very hot and very humid.
2 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah, that was crazy. And Belmadi was like, listen, we missed a lot of chances. We didn't lose. They're on 35 unbeaten streak right now, just 2 behind Italy. So it's still pretty good. And they will qualify because even the third place will qualify. So I don't think they're worried at all. With Ben Chilwell out, Chelsea have recalled Kennedy from his loan at Flamengo, Gab. They wanted Emerson, but Lyon didn't release him. Does that make sense to you, Kennedy?
I think it makes more... Marcos Alonso has his limits in certain games, and certainly in a 4, it is what it is. But I think if you're going to play the system he's played most of the year with a 3-4-1-2 or 2-1, I think Marcos Alonso is fine. So all you need is somebody who will come in and not screw things up excessively. So... I think Kennedy's fine. He says 25 years old, didn't have a great time at Flamengo, as I understand it, but he's got plenty of experience in Europe, and that's the advantage of having this enormous loan army that you can turn to. Certainly makes more sense to me than going and spending money on your boy Luca Dean. No disrespect to Luca Dean.
Definitely.
Now, this was a few days ago, but as you know, news travels slowly in this day and, day and age. Arayan's James Rodriguez, you may have heard of him, was reportedly instrumental in helping Al Wakra's Usman Koulibaly when he collapsed during their Qatar Stars League game after suffering a heart attack. Koulibaly's in stable condition. His wife took to Instagram to reassure us. That was quick thinking, Jules, really, and the video is out. It's pretty
you can
remarkable.
See they're in the goal, and then James puts his head straight so he can breathe, which is quite, but he reacted straight away. It's really remarkable, and well done to James for having the presence of mind to just go straight and having that desire to help and everything, and knowing what to do, especially.
It's knowing what
like,
to do,
it's
yeah.
not just like, hey, go on. It's like, you know, knowing what to do, and clearly saving Koulibaly's life, I think, is pretty incredible. Gambia beat Mauritania 1-0 in the Africa Cup of Nations. But Gab, the Mauritania players weren't pleased at all when the wrong anthem was played before the game twice. What does this stuff keep happening? And it's not just in Africa. We've seen it in many other countries.
We've seen it in
one job.
We've seen it. I can't remember if it was at the World Cup or at the Euros. We've seen it. They've messed up Slovenia and Slovakia. Like, I don't understand it. I mean, you could tell Mauritania not happy. They said, oh, why don't you guys just sing the anthem? Yeah, 11 dudes on the pitch in the stadium. Yeah, we'll sing the like we're some freaking a cappella group. Come on, man. And also, I'm sorry, but I'm not a big tech guy, but I'm assuming these days there's some sort of laptop.
There must be.
You can go on YouTube. You can find new Mauritania anthem. Wait, is it this one? Is it that? This is what I imagine. I imagine somebody saying, oh, Google it quickly, and we'll feed it through the speaker. Come on, man. Come on. Do better. Mauritania deserves better.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday, right?
Yes.
North London Derby, City Arsenal. How about all that? No,
yes.
Sorry, City Chelsea.
Chelsea.
There you go.
Big games everywhere.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.